Congress asks, what were the rating agencies thinking?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, welcome to The Morning Open. I'm Bill Radke. Credit rating agencies, the companies paid to say whether investments were low risk or high risk. We all know they blew it leading up to the financial crisis, and today executives from the agencies are explaining themselves to Congress. That is coming up. First, let's say good morning to the New York Stock Exchange. Where's Wall Street? The Dow is down 18 points now at 11,115. The NASDAQ and the S&P 500 are both down 0.2%. Greece today formally asked for a bailout, $60 billion from the European Union and the International Monetary Fund, the largest bailout for a country ever attempted. Stocks in Europe are almost 1% higher now, while Asian markets fell earlier in the day. Let's say good morning now to Chris Lowe, chief economist at FTN Financial. He comes to us live from New York City. Good morning.
Good morning.
Chris, we just got some new economic data in. New orders for big-ticket manufactured goods tanked last month because of a plunge in orders for commercial airplanes. I thought Boeing was doing pretty well.
Yeah, you know, and they are doing pretty well. The issue here is actually an accounting thing. Basically, Boeing has had orders. They've reported stronger orders for aircraft all year, but the Commerce Department doesn't count an order until cash changes hands. And what we're looking at is a situation where the 787, most of the orders that are coming in this year, isn't in full production yet, and so they haven't been paid for. The reality, orders are a lot better than they looked in this report.
Great to hear. Okay, let's talk credit rating agencies. Executives of Moody's and Standard & Poor's are explaining to a Senate committee today why they didn't tell investors toxic assets were toxic. And my question is, does anybody trust these companies now? And if not, who is evaluating investments?
No, unfortunately, Moody's and S&P's credibility has plunged in the last couple of years. They've just, especially on mortgage-backed securities, completely missed the boat. Unfortunately, almost every bond manager is still using Moody's and S&P to make investment decisions.
Well, that sounds scary, Chris. Is no one valuing these securities, and are we at risk of going down again?
No, and there are. There are independent analysts that they're using, too. The problem is, though, the way the financial rules are written right now, they really don't have a choice because things like capital set-asides and requirements for state pension funds are based on the ratings of these agencies. So as a fund manager, you just don't have a choice. Luckily, the economy's doing better now, so that means we do have a couple of years to fix this before we're likely to see another big round of defaults.
Chris Lowe, chief economist at FTN Financial, thank you.
You're welcome.
And I mentioned Greece and the International Monetary Fund. So happens the IMF is meeting today in Washington. John Dimsdale now tells us world leaders are talking about how the U.S. is, well, we're doing our own thing.
Previewing the 3 days of high-level meetings, IMF Managing Director Dominique Strauss-Kahn was asked what he thought about U.S. financial regulatory reforms. He said the President and Congress are acting too quickly.
It comes too soon in terms of having a global answer, and the fact that different countries are moving, which I can totally understand, makes it more difficult to have a global and coordinated answer.
A global recession requires a global fix, he says, and part of the solution is a worldwide bank tax, which Strauss-Kahn says would serve two purposes.
One is to secure some resources to be able to help for crisis resolution, and the second was to have a tool that will help curb risk-taking behavior.
If the tax idea gets a favorable response from finance ministers this weekend, the IMF will submit it to the meeting of the G20 heads of state in June. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
This is the Morning Report for Friday, April 23rd at Marketplace.org. In recent months, we've heard a lot of hopeful talk about a recovery and light at the end of the tunnel. The problem is That tunnel is longer than expected. Instead of a rebound, some cities are bracing for another wave of foreclosures. Marketplace's Jeff Tyler takes us to Seattle.
Regional banks in Washington State made some bad commercial real estate loans, and in some cases, those loans will sink them. Economist Matthew Gardner.
I expect we'll see a fairly substantial number of those banks not exist by the end of 2010.
As banks fail, many of their bad loans will get sold at a discount. Cindy Thomas is a Seattle real estate lawyer.
Once all that property starts hitting the market, I personally believe that the values are going to drop again.
Falling prices probably sound like a good thing if you're a renter and a bad thing if you're an owner. Or maybe you think problems in commercial real estate don't touch you at all. But Thomas says the ripple effects reach everyone.
You got a retail strip and it's half empty. It just brings down all of the property values in the neighborhood.
Seattle has too much vacant office space on the market and too many unsold condos. Economist Matthew Gardner says that will directly impact the city's development.
The city is going to be in a bit of a holding pattern, I think, going forward. I would expect to see no residential nor commercial new projects start development for quite some time.
A holding pattern is bad news for unemployed construction workers. Gardner says over the last year, construction employment is down 20%. There are lots of signs that the local economy could get worse before it gets better. But at least a few developers are staying optimistic, according to Charles Stadiker, who owns a commercial real estate company.
In many cases, people are still going through the permitting stage because they realize in 2 or 3 years it will be again time to build.
But before that, many more banks could go belly up and a lot more real estate may go into foreclosure. In Seattle, I'm Jeff Tyler for Marketplace.
You can hear more from Jeff on our weekend show, Marketplace Money. This week, the focus will be on all things Seattle. I'm from Seattle. Hi, Seattle. Russia's government has just sold $5 billion worth of so-called euro bonds. This is the first time Russia has tapped the world bond markets since its financial system caved in the late 90s. Reporter Peter Van Dyke has the story from Moscow.
Demand for the new Russian bonds was 5 times greater than the supply, and there's good reason for that, says Ben Aris, editor of Business New Europe, the leading financial journal in Eastern Europe.
The state debt, foreign debt, now is only 8% of GDP, which is tiny. So it's in a very strong position. These bonds are seen as rock solid. There's no danger of it defaulting, as it did 12 years ago.
Back then, in the summer of 1998, Russia's financial system collapsed. And Russia soon defaulted on its debt. The memory of that humiliation has never faded, but times change.
The financial shape of Russia now is much, much stronger than 12 years ago.
Nikolai Podguzov of VTB Capital Investment Bank says the quick rebound of oil prices since the global economic crisis has boosted government finances. Russia doesn't even need the Eurobond money anymore.
The central bank bought as much as $30 billion into the reserves during the first quarter, and another $5-6 billion. This is quite an insignificant amount for Russia, I think.
So if the $5.5 billion is insignificant, why issue the bond? Business New Europe's Aris says it's a marketing exercise.
Russia's rating is on a par with that of Greece and Iceland, both countries which are virtually bankrupt. And the point of the bond is that the bond will be priced on the basis of Russia's macroeconomic fundamentals. And this will make investors sit up and take a look at Russia again as an attractive country to invest.
So selling the bond was the easy part. It might take a bit longer to sell international investors on Russia. In Moscow, I'm Peter Van Dyke for Marketplace.
Government report released late yesterday says healthcare reform will be more expensive than promised. It's a mixed report, sure to be held up by both Democrats and Republicans in the coming elections. Here to make sense of the numbers, Marketplace's Gregory Warner from our health desk at WHYY joins us live from Philadelphia. Hi, Gregory.
Good morning, Bill.
Now, didn't the Congressional Budget Office say that this healthcare law will save us money?
They're looking at two different sides of the elephant. This report is from the Center for Medicaid and Medicare Services, or CMS. They're the economic analysts for Medicaid and Medicare. And they say the law will increase healthcare spending in the first decade by 0.9%. Whereas they're not looking at new tax revenue. The CBO, the Congressional Budget Office, took into account taxes, the new taxes, in their estimates. And so they say the bill will decrease the federal deficit by $143 billion in the first 10 years.
Gregory, that's a lot of numbers flying from different directions. What does it mean?
In the end, this is all everyone's best guess. You know, take a question like, when you subsidize people's insurance, do they cost more? Well, maybe, because they're more likely to get care. Or are they long-term cheaper because they get care and therefore they're more productive at work and less likely to get chronic diseases? There's lots of factors, and the predictive science gets very ideological, very murky. And it's not only hard to predict human behavior, it's hard to predict politicians. The CMS says that the cuts the reform law promises to Medicare are politically unrealistic and the politicians won't make them. And how do you put a cost estimate on political will?
Good question, Gregory Warner. Thanks a lot.
My pleasure.
Arizona's governor is now deciding whether to let the toughest immigration bill in the country become law. Some business leaders there worry this anti-immigrant bill will make Arizona's economy worse than it already is, as Jill Barshay reports.
This Arizona bill would require the police to check the status of people they suspect to be illegals. About 2 million, or 30% of Arizona's residents, are Hispanic. Most of them, more than 1.5 million, are here legally. John Boyd runs the Boyd Company. He advises big corporations on where to locate their facilities. He says the timing could not be worse.
We're in a recession. Arizona businesses have enough problems right now.
Boyd worries that businesses like food processors will stop coming to Arizona.
It was certainly an advantage to have access to cheap workers, to do jobs that no one else wants to do. This bill may interfere with that immigration and hurt the diverse, rich labor market and increased operating costs.
Boyd says business leaders are bracing for a drop in tourism and for national Hispanic groups to organize boycotts. Republican Governor Jan Brewer has a pro-business reputation, but she's also up for re-election this November. I'm Jill Barshay for Marketplace.
Now, here's the week's business news in a Marketplace Minute. Goldman Sachs is in trouble for betting against the housing bubble while they were selling opposite bets to clients who now have major regrets. And a Goldman director is accused of aiding a guy who's accused of insider trading. And all this comes right as Congress considers some rules that give Goldman a case of the jitters. And that, you would think, is the end of my rhyming about Goldman Sachs and its terrible timing. But no, this was also their week to confess they just made $3 billion, more or less. GM is paying back what we loaned, which is us paying us, since they're taxpayer-owned. Europe's airlines are hemorrhaging cash because Iceland's volcano's a plane in the ash. And Europe says Greece's debt still haunts them. I got some Greek bonds, if anyone wants them. Well, if you change your mind, you know where I'll be. Come see me at marketplace.org. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. In Los Angeles, I'm Bill Radke.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.